important point. Krishna says that I carry to them what they lack. So what do you lack? You lack what you are not due according to your karma. It's not that you're going to be lacking something, but actually you're due it. Lacking in that sense. No. If any living being is lacking anything for their happy existence in life generally, it's simply their karma, isn't it? It's not that whimsically someone is being deprived of something, so now they're lacking. No. So Krishna says that even if, according to your karma, the devotee, even if you're due to be lacking something, but I'll carry it to you. And I preserve what you have. What things might you have which would need to be preserved? Things which, according to your karma, you are due to lose. Those things, they would need to be preserved. Otherwise, if according to your karma, you're due to have those things, then you don't need to worry about preserving them. But Krishna is saying that even if according to your karma, you're due to lose something, I'll preserve it for you. So Krishna is actually interfering here with the laws of karma for his devotee, out of love. So Krishna is really expressing something from his heart. Because of his feelings of love, he's doing like that. Otherwise, if you're practicing karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga, chakra yoga, or any other yoga, then you just follow the process and you get what you deserve. But not if you're a devotee. No. Krishna involves himself very deeply. So we'll see this more in a few verses. But this is an important statement here in this verse. There's one very interesting story, I know some of you have heard of it, told by Srila Prabhupada about one Brahmin who would read this verse. He would read Bhagavad Gita every day, but when he came to this verse, he would become confused. Because here Krishna says, Vahami Aham, which means that I personally carry and deliver. Personally, Vahami Aham. That I in person do this. So this Brahmin became confused that Krishna is so great, he's God. He couldn't personally come and do like a door-to-door delivery here to his devotee. Here, you take this from his hand. No. So he thought that this word Vahami must not be correct. More suitable would be the word Karomi. Karomi means that I cause it to happen. Krishna is the supreme controller, so he may cause it that you get this and get that and so on. So this Brahmin was thinking like this. So therefore he took his leaf, Bhagavad Gita was handwritten on leaves, and he actually scratched it off the leaf. Physically removed it. He didn't just ink over it. He actually scratched it away from the leaf. And he wrote in that place, Karomi. And he thought, very nice. Then, well, he was a very poor Brahmin. Then he had to go out and beg food for lunch, he and his wife. They would just live on what he could beg every day. So while he was out, there was a knock on the door. And one little boy was there with a big basket of vegetables and all sorts of food. And the wife asked, what's this? What's happening? And the boy said, well, I saw your husband. He was begging for food and I felt sorry for him. So here, I brought some for you. So the wife took it and she was very thankful and the boy turned around to walk away. And she noticed that on his back, some say on his back, some say on his forehead, but anyway, somewhere, there were some nasty cuts which were bleeding. And she asked him, oh, what happened? And the boy said, well, you might be surprised to hear this, but your husband did this to me. And she said, no, no, he would never do that. Why did he do that? And he said, well, you should ask him when he gets back. It was a very wrong thing that he did. Not very nice. So So then the boy went, and the husband returned a little while later, and he said he wasn't successful in getting any food. So he told his wife, "I guess we're going to have to fast today." And his wife said, no, I'm cooking a big feast with all those things that little boy brought, you remember? What little boy? You know that boy, the one you hit him on the back and you cut his back in such an unkind way? And the husband was bewildered. He said, "I didn't meet any boy. I would never do a thing like that." He said, yes, he showed me. You cut him on his back. It was very nasty. And he was trying to figure out what on earth is going on. And then as he was thinking, his eyes fell to his table where this leaf was lying, where he'd scratched out the word Bahami and written Karomi. And suddenly it clicked that was Krishna. And he personally carried to us what we needed, what we were lacking. So then he fell down at his wife's feet and said, "You're such a great devotee. Krishna personally came and appeared before you. And I'm such a rascal that all I could do is cause him pain." So then he scratched out Karomi and wrote Vahami in again. And then he went dancing around singing Vahami, Vahami. No one could understand quite what he was doing. But he was very inspired. So it's like that. So here, according to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Arjuna asks a question that your devotee is allowing Krishna. Because your devotee is so busy serving Krishna, he's got no time to look after himself. So indirectly, he's forcing Krishna to serve him. So is this not a sign of a lack of Krishna consciousness? Surely he should take a little time out from his service and look after himself. But then Krishna says to Arjuna, "No, I don't feel it to be a burden. I enjoy doing it. I want to do it. I want to look after my devotee." Just like a father, he's providing for his family. He doesn't feel that, "Oh, what a burden." He wants to do it. And then Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gives a very vivid example to illustrate the point, to illustrate Krishna's feelings, because this is coming from Krishna's heart. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, it's just like a young boy, a young man, who has a young girlfriend. So they have that, some sort of affectionate type of relationship. So they're walking together, and they come to one river. And the girl says to the boy, "Will you pick me up and carry me across?" And the boy, he's very happy to do it. The boy doesn't think that, "Oh, you're so heavy. Why should I carry you? Why can't you walk across like me?" No. Actually, he's looking for opportunities to have that sort of exchange with her. He's looking for opportunities. So he says this is the mood of Krishna, that he wants to do things like this. He's looking for opportunities to serve his devotees. So this is a very intimate mood that Krishna is expressing here. That whatever the laws of karma may be, whatever my devotee is due according to those laws, that doesn't matter. But I am now dealing with my devotee. So that's a very nice thing. So then Krishna goes on, verses 23 and 24, to again sort of blast the demigod worshippers. They're worshipping the demigods. Actually, they're really worshipping me. But they're doing it avidipurvakam, in a wrong way. They're doing the wrong thing. And verse 24, because they're doing the wrong thing, what happens? They fall down. They fall down. So if you're preaching to Indian people, you should remember these verses and the verses of the seventh chapter, because they make it very clear that demigod worship is really not correct. People will simply end up falling down. And verse 25, he's explaining that my devotees will come to me. Other people will go wherever they deserve to go, but my devotees will come to me. And that means eternal life, full of bliss and knowledge. Now the last section is a very important section. Krishna is really, he expresses a number of very nice sentiments about his devotees. In verse 26, well, there are three subsections, you see. First is that it's such a simple process, but the result is incomparable. Second section, subsection is that Krishna favors his devotees, and when we discuss how much he favors his devotees, I think many of you will be quite amazed at what Krishna says. And third subsection is that no one is disqualified. Anyone has full opportunity. Everyone has full opportunity to get this highest benefit through devotional service. So the first subsection is verses 26 to 28. Such a simple process, but such a wonderful result. So verse 26, I'm sure you've all heard of this verse. Krishna says, you can offer me just one leaf, just one flower, just one fruit, just a little water, if that's all you can afford, if that's all you're able. It doesn't have to be extravagant if you're not able to provide something very substantial. Even one leaf will be enough. You know the story of Sanatana Goswami and Madan Mohan, I suppose. When Sanatana Goswami first, Madan Mohan sort of presented himself to Sanatana Goswami, Madan Mohan was being looked after very nicely by a very nice Brahmin family in Mathura. They are providing him with very nice food and everything. And Sanatana said that, I can't provide you with such things. I live on practically nothing. But Madan Mohan was saying, no, I want to come with you. I want to come with you and travel around Vraja. So I don't mind. Even if it's just dry chapatis, I'll accept it. So after a while, Sanatan, he'd been offering dry chapatis every day. After a while, Madan Mohan said, you know, I've been getting dry chapatis every day for so long now. Can't you do a little better? And Sanatan said, I knew you'd complain eventually. So I'm going to take you back to that family in Mathura. And they'll feed you very nicely. But Madan Mohan said, no. It's all right. I want to stay with you. So I'll accept whatever you offer. So it's like that. Krishna wants the bhakti, actually. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that ideally, the leaf, you know, like the vegetables, the flowers, the fruits, they should all be planted by devotees, grown by devotees, harvested by devotees. They should definitely be cooked by devotees and offered by devotees. Ideally. Of course, that's, I would say, generally not possible. So Prabhupada said that if at least you pay the price, if you buy it in the market, that sort of takes care of the karma that may be involved in how it was grown and so on, by if it was prepared or grown by karmis. But definitely we should stay clear of food which is cooked by devotees. I think I mentioned earlier on that Prabhupada said that if you eat grains which have been cooked by non-devotees, then your mind becomes wicked. It's very dangerous. Now, in verse 27, one other point. This verse 26 is one of three verses in this chapter which Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says are very advanced verses. The other verses are 14 and 22. So 14, 22, and 26, according to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, are very advanced verses. Now the next verse, 27, is like a step down. Arjuna is thinking that he says to Krishna, I don't know if I can come to such a high level immediately. I'd like to, but I don't know if I could do it right now, just right, like on the spot. So Krishna then speaks this verse. And this verse You might think that this is like Nishkam Karma Yoga. Or you might think, actually, it's more like Sakam Bhakti Yoga. So there's a very interesting discussion between Krishna and Arjuna right here. I won't go through the entire thing. But Arjuna protests that, can't I be considered to be performing pure devotional service? He says that, I fast on Ekadasi. If I ever do any sacrifice, it's always for Vishnu. And these are all part of bhakti. But Krishna says that you are doing these things out of duty. You're doing them, then you're offering them. Now if you do them, if you do your duty and then offer you the results of your duty, that's Nishkam Karma Yoga. But if you just do things, not because they're duty, you just do things because you feel like you want to serve Krishna in that way, then this is Sakam Bhakti Yoga. Because you're not acting according to your duty. Therefore it can't be considered Karma Yoga. But you're acting in the way that you want to act in relationship with Krishna. So therefore it is Sakam. Do you follow? I hope you follow. I mean, it's all a little subtle. We could go into it more deeply, and it gets even more subtle, but this is the basic idea. That when you're doing your duty according to your Varnashram position, this is Karma Yoga. But when you're acting not according to your duty, but because you feel inspired to act in that way, and you're doing it for Krishna, then this is not part of Karma Yoga. This is actually part of Bhakti Yoga. But it's still Sakam, because you're acting in terms of your own feelings, rather in terms of what Krishna wants, like a clear idea of what Krishna actually wants. Then it would become Nishkam Bhakti Yoga. So Krishna, the point is there that in Karma Yoga, you act and you offer the result. But in Bhakti Yoga, it's a very interesting point. In Bhakti Yoga, the offering starts with, guess what? What does the offering begin with? Yeah, but the offering begins with you. You offer yourself. And when you're offered, this is a rather interesting concept, but when you're offered to Krishna, then you're simply acting for Krishna. There's no question of anything un-Krishna conscious, because you're offered to Krishna. But in Karma Yoga, there's you and you think, yes, I have my duty and I must do it and it's my duty, and then I'll offer it. It's mine and I'm offering it. So wherever there is the idea of offering. In other words, that something is separate from Krishna, but now we're presenting it. Here, Krishna, you can have it now. There's a danger of it not really being bhakti. Because bhakti means that everything is connected. We're perceiving everything as being connected with Krishna, which is true. Everything is connected with Krishna. And rather than exactly offering it, here, Krishna, you can have it now. It was mine or it was someone else's, but now you can have it. No, we're just acknowledging that Krishna, it's yours. It is yours, so here, you enjoy it. In that sense, offering in that sense. So, Krishna, he actually explains like this. In pure devotional service, you simply act for my pleasure. You don't really offer anything. But here in Karma Yoga, you perform your activities and then you offer. So in bhakti, the devotee is already, the actor is already offered. And this is like the fundamental difference between Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. So Krishna says, whatever you do, Just whatever you do, whatever you may feel like doing, not whatever your duty is, not that, but whatever you just do, whatever you happen to eat, according to how you feel like eating, whatever you may give in charity or give away, not according to your duty, but just because you want to, you do that for me. So you're doing those things because you want to, therefore it's sakka. But because it's not being done in terms of varnashram and your duty according to your varna and so on, it can be considered a part of bhakti, although it's still sakka, due to the fact that you're acting on your own inspiration. And if you do like this, verse 28, Krishna says, if you do like this, then you'll become purified, you'll come to me. So it'll be very good for you, Arjuna. In our cases, we should act according to the instructions of the spiritual master. Now we go on to the second subsection, verses 29 to 31. 29's another important verse. There's a very subtle point to be understood here. That very subtle point is that the first two lines of this verse, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu na me dveshosti na priyaha, which translates as, I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone, I'm equal to all. This is referring to the supersoul. This is how the supersoul acts. But when Krishna says, Ye bhajanti tamam bhaktya, mai te teshu chapyaham, but whoever renders service unto me in devotion as a friend, is in me, and I'm also a friend to him. Here Krishna is talking about himself, Bhagavan, and how he relates to his devotees. In other words, the supersoul is simply giving everyone whatever they deserve, good, bad, whatever it may be. He doesn't, if someone is suffering because he has given them some suffering, it doesn't indicate that he dislikes them. It's just their karma. And he's overseeing it. And if someone is enjoying materially, it doesn't indicate that he's favoring them. He's simply seeing that they get their karma. But Krishna, as Bhagavan, Krishna, because Paramatma doesn't really have like personal relationships, but Krishna as Bhagavan, he definitely has personal relationships. So Krishna takes this position of being a friend to his devotees. And how does he do that? Verse 30 explains extremely vividly. This is Krishna's making such a strong point here, it's practically astonishing. Even if one commits the most abominable action, if he's engaged in devotional service, he must be considered saintly, because he's properly situated in his determination. So Krishna says, Sudaracha. Acha means activity. Duracha means bad activity. And Sudaracha means extremely bad, abominable. In Ramanujacharya's commentary on Bhagavad Gita, he expresses it that even if a person acts in a way which is exceedingly wicked, very strong language, exceedingly wicked, but as long as he's ananya bhak, as long as he's fully engaged in devotional service, then sadur eva, he must be considered saintly. Now, of course, it's very important to grasp the idea that Krishna is saying that only as long as that person is ananya bhak, undeviatingly engaged. If the person does something abominable and then leaves Krishna consciousness and is no longer engaged in devotional service, then you don't consider them saintly. But if a person remains engaged in devotional service, then even if they commit the most abominable action, you must consider them saintly.
there's a very interesting exchange between Krishna and Arjuna here, according to Vishnath Chakravarti Thakura. Arjuna protests that, you know, how is it possible? If he's Sudaracha, it can't really be possible. When someone's engaged in devotional service, he's a sadhu, of course, but not when he's a nonsense. Not when he's engaged in some maya. And Krishna says, no, that's not correct. Because of his determination, ananyabhak, determination to serve, I keep him as a sadhu. Because he's resolved to serve, despite his weaknesses. But then Arjuna protests further that I can understand that we might not kick him out. I mean, we might kick him out, but we might not kick him out. But to consider him a saint, I can't accept it. And Krishna gets a little angry. And Krishna says, no, I keep him as a sadhu. I keep him as a sadhu. And Krishna explains that this devotee laments. He says, he laments remembering Krishna again and again. Because of his lamentation, his heart burns and he becomes purified through that burning fire of lamentation and remorse. He thinks, alas, alas, there's no other devotee like me. I'm a black spot amongst the devotees. Again and again he curses himself. So because of this lamentation he becomes purified. And then Krishna speaks verse 31. Shipram Bhavati, he speaks the first two lines of verse 31. Shipram Bhavati Dharmatma Shashvash Chantam Nagachati. He quickly becomes righteous through this lamentation and like that. But then Arjuna protests again that I can't really accept it. How's it possible? What? Then Arjuna says, what about if he remains a Sudurachari for the rest of his life? While still engaged in devotional service somehow or other at the same time. So what happens then? And then Krishna's eyes become red with anger. And he shouts at Arjuna, Kanteya Pratijanihi, Name Bhakta Pranashati. That my devotee will never perish. And I want you to declare it. Arjuna becomes frightened. He says, all right. I'll accept it. But how are other people going to accept it? Then Krishna tells him, Kanteya Pratijani. You go and tell them. He says, you take drums and cartels and you go to the marketplace and you stand up on an elevated place and you declare to everyone that people understand that Krishna's devotee never perishes. And when you've gathered them all together, then you go to a place where there are some people who are having a meeting, and just like you, they can't accept this point. And they're debating, what does Krishna mean? And you go right into the middle of that meeting with all the people from the marketplace, with your drums and cartels, and you break up the meeting, and you tell them, no, you're wrong. Krishna said, Name Bhakta Pranashati, that my devotee never perishes, as long as the devotee is engaged in Ananya Bhakti. So unfortunately we have to end here. But tomorrow...